I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, when to tip off a friend about coming bad news and when to keep quiet. It's one of the subjects we talk about in our monthly visit with our ethics panel, and a government concession rekindles the debate over whether common childhood vaccines somehow cause autism. But first, we want to talk about gangs. If you were listening to the program last week, you might have heard a conversation about an author we had planned to have on the program who'd written a compelling book about her life connected to one of LA's street gangs. It turns out that the memoir was a fake. The woman was, in fact, a fairly privileged one-time student who had created the whole thing. But what almost got lost amid the dust-up over the fake gang memoir is the fact that L.A. street gangs are very real and are in the middle of what seems to be a surge in violent confrontations that have claimed a number of innocent victims, including many children, and may have racial overtones. Here to tell us more about this are Sam Quiñones, who covers immigration and gangs for the Los Angeles Times, and Connie Rice, co-director of the Advancement Project Los Angeles and author of the study A Call to Action, a case for a comprehensive solution to L.A.'s gang violence epidemic. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, Connie. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. And as Connie has written, Los Angeles has had a violence crisis for over 20 years, but every now and again, these spasms of violence seem to get everybody's attention, and we seem to be in the middle of one of those now. Sam, I'd like to ask you first, what are some of the recent events that have so troubled the city?
There was several events. There was a six-year-old boy who was in the backseat of an SUV as his family was looking for an address in the southern part of the city. The family was black. They passed some Latino street gang members who flashed some signs and simply fired into the vehicle, hitting the six-year-old boy, who I believe, last I heard, was still on life support and doesn't look good. There was a wild, massive shootout at a school. Where a man who actually had a gang passed, but may have been trying to kind of leave it all behind. At any rate, he was walking near a school with his two-year-old granddaughter in his hand, in his arms, was shot repeatedly. She was very luckily not hurt, but it was right near a school, and she very well could have been killed. There was the shooting of a football player near his home. In a high school football player near his home in the mid-city area of Los Angeles. He was black. The shooters were Latino street gang members.
I see. So a number of cities on the East Coast as well, in the middle, all along sort of the Eastern Seaboard, have also seen kind of increases in homicide this year. So, Sam, just one more question to you before we turn to Connie. Los Angeles is also experiencing an increase in homicides, but is it believed to be predominantly gang-related, or are there other factors at work?
No, I think part of it is gang-related issues, and particularly in certain parts of the city. Watts has had a problem. The northeast section of L.A. has had a definite gang war going on, but I think a lot of it is just kind of the simple kind of flukes of daily life that happen kind of weather, regardless of what's going on in the gang world, and some of this, I think, just is, you know, domestic cases and that kind of thing that would be very, very hard to prevent.
Connie, there's always in a situation like this a question of whether this is racially motivated or ethnically motivated. As a person who's been spending a lot of time in recent years thinking about the gang situation in Los Angeles, what's your take on this?
Well, I think the cross-racial killings alarm politicians and community members probably the most. However, they're still 5% or less of the gang slaying. Most of the gang violence is black on black, brown on brown still. And so I think we get more attention paid to the killings of people who are not gang involved or affiliated, and we pay more attention to the cross-racial killings because they do have the potential to set off larger racial conflicts, but they're still the minority of most gang. I think the situation that Sam is describing is he's setting the context for the overall crime milieu in L.A. However, within that context, L.A. city and county have had a 20-year youth gang homicide epidemic. And even with the recent citywide 40-year lows in homicide rates, for example. Most of the city is quite safe right now. But in the hot zones that Sam described, South L.A., East L.A., Northeast San Fernando Valley, they are permanent, entrenched, chronic areas of high gang violence, not just violence in general, although that's there too, high gang violence. And we have 300,000 children in the city of Los Angeles alone who are trapped in those territories.
When you've used the word epidemic for years to talk about this issue, Connie, when you use that word, and how do you think the epidemic has changed over the years? Are you saying that it was predominantly, you know, black on black, Latino on Latino in years past, and what's happening now? Or is it shifting? Are these two groups sort of bumping up against each other?
Well, it's still predominantly black on black and brown on brown and Asian on Asian. And if you go out to Orange County, it's only the white gangs that do the cross-racial stuff because they're racist in their ideology. Epidemic is not my word. Mm-hmm. Epidemic is the word of epidemiologists who study violence as a disease. And you calculate it by violent gang crimes per population. And depending on how you carve out the area of the population, you can establish in these hot zones that for 20 years, the homicide data establishes conclusively that Los Angeles has had an endemic epidemic of youth gang homicides, even with the reductions in overall homicide rates. Our youth gang homicide rate, the rate at which our children are murdering each other in these gangs, has never dipped below the epidemic level. So right now, when we are lowering even the gang crime, which we did last year, or at least the police did last year, it was a lower level of epidemic, but it was still an epidemic. So it's kind of like the car bombs in Baghdad. We're celebrating the fact there are no longer 300 a month, but there are still 100 a month.
And 100 a month is more than any of us wants to tolerate.
Well, no one should tolerate a single one.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More, and we're talking about street violence in Los Angeles, or gang-related violence, if you will, with Connie Rice and Sam Quiñones of the Los Angeles Times. Sam, what are city officials saying about their response to this current surge in violence, if I could call it that?
Well, I think they've tried to focus on, you know, increasing police patrols. It's the common thing that the city officials do, you know, increase police patrols in these areas where there have been these issues. In Northeast, I've noticed that's definitely been the case. They've gone after, in fact, the city attorney has very aggressively gone after gang injunctions which prohibit the association of these gang members to be seen together, to be in a car together, that kind of thing. I suppose that's continuing, and has gone after some of the houses that gang members frequently use, a house that has either been commandeered or is a member of their family or somehow something like that, to kind of congregate, sell dope out of, and so on. So I think that's kind of what's been happening. I think it's my feeling, frankly, after covering this stuff for a while, though, is that Los Angeles really suffers from one problem. It suffers from anyway is simply it has too few police officers for the issues that it faces in terms of gangs, and so it is therefore faced with sending a number of officers into an area when that area is kind of kicked off in a kind of violent way or grabbed headlines in a spectacular way, but then they have to take those officers from somewhere else. And this has happened, for example, in the Harbor Gateway. For a while, they had lots more patrols, which is in the southern area of the city. They had a lot more patrols down there, and now they have a few less because they just don't have the folks to kind of permanently patrol these areas in ways that probably they would need to.
Okay. Connie, what about long-term? You've called for a Marshall Plan, in essence, to end gang violence. What would that entail?
Well, I'd like to set the context for this for just a little bit. Sam just described the usual political reaction to this. One of the mistakes that we make is that we think of gang violence and gangs almost solely as a crime reduction issue. We view it, we throw injunctions at it, we do mass incarceration, we do dragnets, we go after the violent people, all of which should be done. But the solution to gang crime gang crime reduction is a completely different enterprise from ending the gang culture. And the politicians don't read policy papers. They don't know anything about policy. Their staffs don't know anything about policy and do not care to read anything about policy. So they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. They keep reacting to a high-profile shooting. They douse it with law enforcement. They do the surge, and they purge, and then they wait for the next shooting. Well, you can't solve an epidemic with a fly swatter. If you have a malaria epidemic and you have to think of this disease of gang violence as a disease, which is what the epidemiologists are telling us, you have to go after it like you would go after an Ebola outbreak.
I'm sorry, Connie, you have about a minute left, so I'd like to hear just a couple of minutes on, only about a minute on what are some of the more productive strategies you'd like to see.
Here are the solutions. You have to have a wraparound strategy. Yes, you do your aggressive crime suppression, but the other half of the equation is comprehensive prevention and intervention. You have to organize the neighborhoods, organize the kids, organize the schools. You have to have the faith-based sector, everybody working to create a safety net so that the children are safe 24/7, on the way to school, in school, out of school, after school. You have to secure the parks. You have to have police working with community activists to organize that neighborhood with the local leadership to keep every kid safe. It's called comprehensive prevention and intervention.
Do you see any evidence that there's any will to do that?
I don't think there's the will to fund it. I don't think it takes a lot of funding. But, Michelle, the thing of it is you have to ask the cost of failing to do this. L.A. has had a gang epidemic for 30 years. We've spent $25 billion. We have six times as many gangs and twice as many gang members.
Failure. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Connie Rice is co-director of the Advancement Project Los Angeles and also author of the study A Call to Action, A Case for a Comprehensive Solution to L.A.'s Gang Violence Epidemic. She was kind enough to join us by phone from Altadena, California. We're also joined by Sam Quiñones, who writes about immigration and gangs for the Los Angeles Times, and he joined us by phone from his home in Los Angeles. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Michelle Martin. The conversation continues on Tell Me More from NPR News.